you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What's up, Gypsy Gang? We're back for another episode, continuing on with our WSX coverage from Melbourne. We banged out a couple of podcasts. Hopefully you've listened to the Josh Hill one. Now it's time to wrap your ears around a podcast with Cole Seeley. First time we're getting to do one in the flesh, which is cool. Cole actually did the podcast before we ever had the US studio. We did like the Skype deal through COVID. So this was really cool. He's a guy that I just really enjoy being around. I really enjoy watching him on a dirt bike. And I really enjoy hearing what he has to say. Bit of a tough night for him in Melbourne. He literally got taken out in every single race. So I'm not sure what he has to do to stop that from happening next year. Maybe take a leaf out of his teammate's book next year and just go on the offensive. But nevertheless, he threw a bunch of whips to the crowd in that last moto. But yeah, really enjoyed this podcast. We talked WSX. We talked his, coming out of retirement and his plans for the future. And yeah, I just really enjoyed hanging out with Cole this weekend. We got to watch the 450 races together both nights, which was pretty dope too. So hope you guys enjoy this one. Just also, yeah, massive shout out as well to everybody that came, said g'day, hung out, took photos. Like it was a pretty humbling experience, to be honest, just to see how many of the Gypsy Gang were there. There was so much merch getting around. Made me very, very proud of our little community that we've created. Honestly just fired me up to get back to work on Monday and just keep going. We've got a bunch of cool stuff coming up over the next couple of weeks as well. So I think that's kind of it for that. The first podcast that we're bringing you today is with one of my favorite people, Josh Hill. We've actually figured out that we've just never done one in studio. We're always doing these on location ones. So one of these days we'll get Hill in studio, but nonetheless, one of my favorite people to talk anything dirt bikes with. Before we get into the episode with Hill though, got to bring you some words from our sponsors. And the first shout out we have to give is to the guys at Alpine Stars. But also before I do that, just a massive happy 40-year anniversary to the guys at Monza Imports. Now, they are the company that is behind Alpine Stars in Australia, and we actually went down for their 40th year party on Tuesday. That's why we got down there so early. And it was just mind-blowing to, I guess, get like a bit of a refresher as to just how involved the guys at Monza have been personally in my career. I think the first time I would have walked through the doors at Monza, I would have been like 18 or 19 years old. And that was in my stroke days when I was working for the magazine. And then when I ended up going out on my own and starting MX Daily, those guys were supporting me. I think I run like Alpine Stars gear in like 2007, 2008 in like factory KTM shootouts for stroke and everything. So it was just like crazy cool to see how long those guys have not only been supporting the industry, but been supporting me personally through all of my, my endeavors in the industry. So this ad specifically will be about the Tech 10 boot. That's my choice of boot. And I've kind of contemplated going to the Tech 7s at times. But I think that that's probably one of the cool things about Alpine Stars is that between the Tech 7 and the Tech 10. I really don't think you kind of need to look any further than that. I even wore the Tech 10s all the way up to Cape York, and I know a lot of people will say that maybe wearing a boot with an inner booty for 2 weeks is kind of not as comfortable, but man, I just really enjoy that extra ankle support that you get from having the inner booty. I ride on my toes a lot, which kind of does put a bit more pressure on your ankles, and I just never really seem to have any problems with those boots. They also last forever, and I just, yeah, I don't know, I just don't see myself really changing. I think that if I was doing more, you know, techie enduro stuff like Transmotos, I'm probably gonna look at running some Tech 7s in the future. But like for motocross and then that big kind of touring stuff, the Tech 10 is definitely on the money for me. And not to mention the gear and helmets that that complement that entire lineup. Not only that, I mean, if you rode as well, like the Tech Air, the vest as well as the full suit, the guys at Alpine Stars are really pushing the limits in every category. So thank you to the guys at Alpine Stars for helping us bring you this WSX content, and also thank you to the guys at Monza for their support over all of these years. This podcast is brought to you by a group of legends that I would have called, I guess, personal sponsors in a sense, but never officially sponsors of the podcast. The guys at KTM Newcastle, they are Australia's number one KTM and gas dealer. And pretty much any time I order any genuine parts, I go through ktmnewcastle.com.au. Not only do they have an awesome online resource for KTM genuine parts, but they also are, like I said, they're the best dealership when it comes to KTM and GasGas in Australia. I got a chance to ride the all-new KTM models, which I believe that's going to be up on Bike Sales. We did a review for those guys at Conondale, and obviously I've spent quite a bit of time on the current KTM models, and I was really blown away by some of the changes, especially in the four strokes. The if you heard the podcast, you know I don't really like the air fork that much, but they've actually made some changes. They're only small changes to the air fork, but they kind of address the problem that I kind of found with them. And the bottoming resistance is now so much better. It's got a lot more positive feel on that fork. I think the new ergonomics on that bike are awesome as well. They've really focused on like pulling them in, making them like a lot tighter and skinnier. And I personally really like the feel of the ergos. And just some like simple stuff as well, which is a big win for me on the new KTM models, is the new foot pegs. They're a little bit lower. They're much wider. You guys have always heard me talk about the Ballard's aftermarket foot pegs, which I always put on my KTMs, but I actually don't even know that you'd need to do that. So there's some significant changes for the KTM range this year for 2023, and the guys at KTM Newcastle have fully stocked those bikes. Another real sneaky one, everyone's talking about the KTM 300. A sneaky one for me this year is that KTM 250SX. I rode the 2022 at Miller's place on his arena cross track, and I was blown away with how good that bike was. And then the 2023 version is even better. That's probably the bike that I would be considering buying if I was buying a KTM two-stroke in 2023. So if you are looking to get yourself a brand new KTM this year, then I would suggest you get on the blower, call Shane from KTM Newcastle, tell him you're a member of the Gypsy Gang, and he is going to get you dialed. The four strokes are in stock right now, and the two strokes are expected at the end of the year. So don't miss out. We're actually in a crazy time of bikes just like completely selling out. So yeah, get in quick. We're also brought to you by the guys at Rival Ink Design Co. You can go to rivalinkdesignco.com. Type in Gypsy in their search bar, and you will see that dope custom retro graphics kit that we did for the 350. That bike looks amazing, and I had a bunch of people comment on it the other day at QMP, which was cool. I like having cool bikes. Those guys always deliver. I can't take the credit for it. They're the ones that do it. But you can have it too. They're actually selling that Gypsy kit. It won't just go on a KTM. They can make it fit to any modern bike. If you do get it, tag me. send it to me on IG. I'd be pretty stoked to see what you guys come up with. Rivalinkdesignco.com. They own the game when it comes to graphics. We're also brought to you by the guys at MX Store. They were down in full force on the weekend down in Melbourne. They are Australia's number one for dirt bike parts and accessories. If you order before 2 p.m. on a weekday, you are going to get same-day shipping, which is unreal. Also, you can head to our merch shop at gypsy-tails.shop. Right now, we're doing 30% off when you use the code GypsyGang. You're going to get 15% off with that same code at fisthandwear.com. And we're also brought to you by the guys at crushoz.com.au. Thank you very much for listening to this podcast. We appreciate you all and looking forward to bringing you some new content over the coming weeks. From the gang called Gypsy. Gang and they come and get Gypsy. Gang. Gang and they come and get Gang. Gang. I'm at a Gypsy. Gang. 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 I'm at a Gypsy. But no, I think we do have a box for the weekend. Where's Molly going to watch from?
I don't know.
Fuck, if she wants to come up.
Yeah, I'll let her know. She'd be, I mean, she lives for just like race beers. And, yeah. You know, like she just loves to just run around and scope it all out.
Oh, that's sick. Tell me when we're all rolling, Ronesy. Is this on auto-focus? Yeah, you can manual focus it if you want.
Yeah, what do you think? Like half the dirt? It's like half here?
Yeah, dude. Isn't it crazy that the track's going to get ridden tomorrow?
Dude, you remember Wollongong? Were you at Wollongong?
Nah.
I did 6 o'clock in the afternoon. There was no dirt.
No shit.
On Friday, before the race. They had us do a press thing.
Yeah.
And they had like two little piles of dirt and put hay bales on it so they could like take pictures for the newspaper and stuff. Like there was no track.
That is insane.
And then all the boys like worked all night, and then they had to work all night the next night to get it back out.
Fuck.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's I posted a picture before, and then everyone's just like, those boys got a lot of work to do, huh?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
They do, but it.
Just the logistics of, like, this stadium, though, that's what's gnarly.
They can only have the dirt down for, like, 72 hours or something, right?
I don't know. Yeah, I don't know what the deal is.
They can only have the field covered up for, like, 72 hours or...
Yeah, right. Well, it makes sense because of all the grass.
I guess. Is that real grass?
Yeah, dude, it's, like, real grass. I think... I don't know whether... No, I mean, that probably is.
It don't look like it, but...
Yeah, this is, like, one of the... fucking gnarliest stadiums in Australia, they reckon.
It's one of the sweetest stadiums ever.
Oh, the like location wise and shit, it's insane. We good to go? Yeah,
let me make sure my phone's off.
Oh yeah, I should probably do the same.
Sweet.
All right, my boy Josh Hill is not in the studio once again. We just Josh just pointed out that I've never actually done one of these with him in the studio, so this is just par for the course for us, bro.
That's how it rolls.
We're in Melbourne, and we've got a sweet. If you just listen, we've got a pretty sweet view. We're in the Linfox booth, so thanks, Andy. And we're watching the track get built right now. Talking some WSX, Josh. We're fifth in the series, mate. Yeah. Fifth in the world right now. How's it feel?
It's back on top, man.
Dude, you are now, back.
I mean, fourth, really. If
dude, Tomac's not here, so that spot's there. So what are we going for the box this weekend?
I mean, I'd like to. The last time I was here at Oz X, I got up on the box, and I'd like to. I mean, last weekend, I didn't even start, I don't think, one moto inside the top 10. And then in those short races, I still kind of clawed my way back through, so... Hopefully, I just worked on some starts this week, and yeah, that's kind of...
You're in with a shot.
If I can get a good start, I feel like I can battle up front for sure.
So how was... I didn't get to go to Cardiff. I was going to go to Cardiff, but Millsy had his wedding on, so shout out to Jack. Congratulations on the wedding. How was the experience? Because I watched the broadcast. Obviously, the first broadcast of any like new series is not going to be like a true reflection of like the event itself, I feel like, but looked really good.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I watched just kind of like all the motos, like the condensed version of the broadcast, and I didn't really see what everybody was complaining about. Maybe it was different when you're watching it live and there's some downtime or something, but
yeah,
I don't know. The race was sick. Like the town, the Cardiff, like where we were at, was so rad. Like the stadium was right in the middle of town. The hotel was right there. There was restaurants and bars. Like the place was, it was going off. It was a cool experience. And then it didn't look like I did when I watched it. It didn't look like there was that many people, but there was a lot of people. Like they just had, for some reason, they had the bottom floor like all plastic over it, and like they didn't offer those as seats because I guess the stadium, it's kind of like got a mound in the center.
Yeah.
So because of all the jumps and stuff, they didn't want to have people like with bad views, so they put everybody up top.
But, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it was loud. People were stoked. Like all day long, like in the streets, it was like you couldn't even walk around. It was all moto fans just blowing horns, and I mean, yeah, all those buildings there, like built in like 1000.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like,
yeah,
everything's
yeah.
all old, and I was pumped on it.
That was my one bit of feedback that I actually gave down to the production team today was that on the broadcast, you just couldn't hear the fans. But I was having people, like we actually stayed up live. It was like 3 a.m. when it was on in Oz, and we stayed up live to watch it. And it sounded like there was no one there. But then I'd get, people were sending me a bunch of like Instagram stories or whatever from the event. And it was like insanely loud, dude.
Yeah, I mean, people were all over the streets the whole day. And I mean, in the crowd, it was going off. Like when I hit that quad, like yeah. the place, it erupted. It was sick. Like I was, that was definitely the highlight for me, for sure. It was cool. I mean, the fans all seen it. They were all like, you know, nobody had hit it yet, yeah. you know, in all the races. So it was just kind of a cool moment.
Dude, it must just be cool for you just in general to be like back at the races and then like the spotlight's on you and then you uncork something like that and the crowd goes crazy. Like that's something that I guess, I don't know, I feel like you were like sort of known to be that guy, so like for you to have that moment, that feels right.
It's just cool because a lot of times like in Supercross we do stuff like that, but it'd just be in practice, you know, and then yeah. maybe like 100 people in the stands like seeing it and they're stoked. But to have that opportunity where the spotlight's on you and, you know, the whole stadium's there watching one person.
Yeah.
It's just, I think it's cool for me as a rider, but I think it's really good for all the sponsors, you know, like yeah. to actually get that time where spotlight's on one person, focusing on the sponsors. And it's just, it's cool all the way around.
Yeah. I always thought, and I'm pretty sure I've spoken about it before, but I always thought that opening ceremonies in the US could be a Super Bowl. Yeah. So you like bring the guys out, you play their song, you do their whole deal, like a lap around, and then it's like on the gate, bang, hot lap, and then you, that gives you like that kind of gate pick. Because you're right, like there's so many advantages to it. I think it's like a good chance for fans to like really connect with someone too. Like I feel like just to get to see like an individual rider's style, like the way that you rode the Cardiff track is like different to Kenny and different to Eli. So I just think there's a lot of different like nuances that could like make that pretty special. And I think that it was sick that these guys did that Super Bowl. And I think it was a lot of people's like favorite part of the event.
Yeah. I mean, I think that'd be a great idea if they took note and did something like that. I just, you know, they got their schedule, and that's kind of the way they do it. And you know, it's not broke, so why fix it? I feel like is how they do it. But it's cool. Like with this series, we get to try out these new ideas and these new things and see what works. And definitely, if you were there in the crowd, like that was, it seemed like a high point for the crowd.
What was had you done a Super Bowl before? Because they've done them here, like in the OzX and the. The OzX Opens in the years previous. Was that your first one, or had you done it before?
No, I've done it. I've done it before at quite a few.
Oh, like Bercy
yeah,
and stuff Bercy, do it as well.
I think
too.
Like Geneva used
yeah,
to do it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They're always kind of playing with the, you know, the schedule and the format and everything too. Like they used to have like these elimination races and stuff.
Really?
Like they're always trying new stuff, which is kind of cool.
How does it feel as a rider doing the Super Bowl lap? Like, do you feel pressure? Like, is it hard to throw down a heater, or does it feel pretty similar to like the way you're doing it in quali?
I didn't even really, like, my lap was just clean, and then I hit the quad. Like, it yeah. wasn't, like, a crazy fast lap or anything. I think the whole time I kind of was thinking, okay, just hit my marks, and then, you know, make sure I do the triple before the quad just perfect so I can, you know, like, I knew that was my one moment to shine. You know, I know it's going to be kind of hard to get out in front and lead and bust something like that out and be seen, so I just wanted to have a clean lap, and when I pulled it out, I was just, I was pumped because I did it twice in practice, and that was one of the most violent transitions of any jump I've ever hit. Because
really,
it was kind of a small 3-footer, and it seemed like the spacing was a lot shorter in between those two jumps.
Yeah,
and it was a steep lip, and the landing was we measured it was like 82 feet or something like that.
That's a pretty big hit off a 3-foot lip.
Well, yeah, I mean you didn't even have a full bike length of flat transition into it, so you just had to be perfect, and then. Yeah. So it was a little bit, I didn't want to frame it and look like an idiot. I guess the only pressure is just not looking like an idiot.
I feel like people just generally appreciate the effort. You know what I mean? It's like, hey, man, we appreciate the effort.
It was cool. I had fun.
And Tomac didn't do it. Kind of got that over him, you know?
I mean, Tomac went and won everything. So it doesn't matter. It really wasn't that much.
Take your wins when you can get it, you know?
I'll take that one. No, but I mean, I don't think it was really that much faster just because, like, you kind of had to, the next turn was so slippery and it wasn't banked very good.
Yeah.
So even if you went triple and single and just launched out and then kind of made a quick pivot,
it really
wasn't a whole lot faster.
So would it have been faster if the berm was like way peakier and you could have just like really tucked in and railed it or?
Yeah, or just some more traction or something or ruts.
Like
it was just the dirt there got real, it seemed like it was going to be soft. And then it just got real hard packed.
Is it, do you think that the dirt gets like better over years that they run there? Or is it like the dirt kind of stays the same? Does that make sense? Because I feel like some tracks, like there'll be some tracks where it's like a new venue on the series and then they go there year after year and it's like the dirt kind of gets better over time. Is that like a real thing?
I don't know. Some places they store the dirt, they have a dirt storage and then maybe they screen it more times and it gets better. I don't know. But I don't think there's really anything wrong with the dirt. I thought the track was sick.
Yeah.
The only thing that I would say is like they maybe should have moved some of the hay bales or the cardboard boxes.
Yeah.
Like maybe move them closer to the berms just so that like the insides weren't so far away from the berm.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they just... It seemed like they opened the corners up too much to where the outside was too far away.
Yeah.
So then it just made everybody kind of do that road race line up the inside.
Yeah, yeah.
Like even before and after the whoops. Like you should never go inside before whoops and jump through.
Yeah, and it be faster.
Yeah, but it was like you could rail the outside and then just absolutely annihilate the whoops and then go outside and be as fast as... It wouldn't be like any different than if you just went up the inside and just... pop 333 and called it a day.
Yeah. Well, is there any are these guys asking for any feedback when it comes to the track stuff?
The guys that did the track in Wales is Justin and Alfie and one of the guys from Bakers.
Yeah.
And I mean they're like the coolest dudes. They do a really good job on the track and they kind of asked us what we thought of it and everything. Yeah. But there was really nothing that I would tell them to do different with the track that at Wales, maybe other than throw maybe a little more water to begin with.
Yeah.
Just so we would kind of get the moisture into the dirt and maybe get a few ruts and things like that.
Yeah.
But I mean, the way they built it was good. And it was just different. Like everybody was, a few people were complaining like, oh, the tabletops are too short and steep. And it's like, yeah, okay, but it's different.
Yeah.
You know, like it doesn't have to be the same cookie cutter track for us to have good racing. Like if you like that, it perfect. Go, the States is it, they'll the tabletops always there. Be the same in the States.
Yeah. I think the one cool thing was the track was wide.
Yeah.
Which I think was cool. Like they obviously they got a bit more room. I didn't really think about the way that you said with like the track kind of the markers. You don't really want like those road race lines. But what did it feel like a more open track for you?
I thought the track was good. Like the width of it was good. I think they built it like 25 feet wide.
Yeah.
Which in the States, I think they're 20 feet wide. And then when you put the bales on them, it kind of turns into like 18 feet. They're supposed to be 20 feet is what the rule book says. But, sometimes it's questionable whether maybe they're a couple of feet skinnier. But I don't think that was the reason that the corners, like it was just the corner markers just didn't seem like they were put in the right place.
It was
just somebody, maybe they just needed one more guy on the payroll just to walk around and make sure the track markers were in the right place. For the first round, that's the worst thing. I think it was all right.
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, I definitely got a bunch of messages of just punters that weren't at the event that were like, the track fucking sucked and it was so dangerous. I'm like, I don't know if this looks any like slicker or more hard packed than Phoenix or, like Salt Lake City. I mean, I feel like we see dry and slick supercross tracks.
Well, and everybody that got hurt in that same section, and that section wasn't like dangerous or anything. They were all bike malfunctions or like, I don't know if
Dino got cross-jumped a little bit, or like he made a mistake, or, you know.
And he didn't really get too, he just got a little banged up, right? Like he's racing this weekend. And then Clout had a big one, but I don't, like, he either hit neutral or maybe a rock got in his chain. It was something, you know, out of his
control.
It wasn't the track's fault, you know? So,
and then a chain breaking on JG's bike, that doesn't happen. Like, you don't really see that a lot.
It shouldn't happen. I've seen a lot of bikes pulling up to the line and like with kind of tight chains. I don't know if that was the case with his bike or not, but yeah, no, that you that shouldn't happen. But yeah, every once in a while, some companies just get bad batches of material. You know, it's happened to the best companies. So
yeah. That's I've seen the, swing arms break. Like I've seen all sorts of shit go down.
I mean, that's the biggest, like one of my biggest fears is chain snapping. Like I change a chain like every 5 hours, even though like
damn, you're making me scared now because well, I do super, it like in 50
on moto. I probably just like trail riding or riding a sand track, I'll just let it run. But like if I'm riding supercross, like I'm constantly as soon as there's one little kink in it, pull that thing off, we're done.
Yeah. Metal ramps, what's your take on the metal ramps?
They need to be bigger.
Yeah. Amen, brother.
Like, no, it's good. I think they build it. It's like the same size jump as like a supercross finish line. But yeah, they build it out of a ramp.
Yeah.
I mean, it's good. I just wish they'd put it at 75 so that like
then
we had
really arc off that thing.
Well, that way we actually we have to gas it to make it instead of like trying to scrub it. You know.
Yeah.
But
okay.
Either way, it's cool. I think this weekend it'll be good. We got a dragon back like right into it.
Yeah.
So that'll be. You know, it'll slow the pace down, so you won't just be trying. Hopefully, you'll have to give it some juice to get over it.
Yeah. So, Cardiff, you're carrying so much speed that you're like pretty much chopping the throttle up, a kind of deal.
Yeah, and then like at Cardiff too, it was I don't know why, but they just kept getting the biggest pothole right in front of the ramp. I don't know if that's why everybody was getting flats or not, but so I would kind of do my line on like where the pothole was it, just because I hated that feeling of just like bottoming out into the face of the ramp. But I think. Yeah, it looks like they've got some dirt piled up in front of where the ramp's going to go, so hopefully they'll make that transition just a little bit better.
Yeah. I mean, everything for me, like, it just, I think the event was awesome. I posted one of the question boxes on Instagram, and it was the most responses I've ever had, and it was all from people that were at the event, and I got just pumped with positive, messages of people that... I think like this, the whole sentiment of this series is just like giving fans around the world a chance to see Tomac, a chance to see Roxanne, a chance to see you, a chance to see Dean. Like that's Dino's home supercross, you know, like being called the British GP. Like there was so much, it played out the way they wanted it to, in terms of like fans that never get to see supercross getting to see supercross and just being super pumped on it. And I was listening to Tommy Searle's podcast, and they were saying that like they were in the pub just drinking before the event, and then there's all the old boys in the pub are just like, oh, what the fuck's going on at that, you know, at the stadium, like what's supercross? And then he was saying like a bunch of them just got on and bought tickets and went to the event. So it's like it just seems like that was a really positive launch point for the series, and it kind of ticked the boxes that we're all kind of hoping this would tick, if that makes sense.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, being there and seeing it in person, I thought it was great. I mean, there was a lot of people, the track was good, the competition's good, like there's a lot of guys in both classes. I mean, the 250F class was McElrath won it with like, what did he win, like, or you get like a 5-3-6 something. I mean, It was good racing. The only thing that's kind of tough with the format is it's so quick that you know they go straight back to the gate, and it's almost like we need a little bit more time to do some math.
To figure out like where you're at in the overall and how to play it.
Yeah, like going into my last moto, I really didn't even know what place I was sitting in. I mean, I got a 5 and a 7 going to the last one, so I knew I was probably 5th to 7th, right? But I didn't know exactly how everything played out. So, you know, it's I'm sure as every round comes, like they're gonna keep figuring out how to make it a little bit smoother and make it the fans a little bit more informed on you know how everything's playing out.
Yeah. How about this for an idea? So there was a lovely Gypsy Gang member in the DMs that had a pretty solid idea. I think he thinks that we should do the two motos back to back, like, so go two motos, lights, two motos, 450, and then re-rack the lights. So it's like a final moto, and then re-rack the 450s for a final moto. So yeah. Then you're still getting that three moto format. The last moto can be longer, but then it's sort of like builds a bit of suspense as to who's going to win the overall. And then it kind of gives people that time to figure out exactly where you're at. I still think the pacing, like, no real gaps in the, you know, in the racing. I think you could fit it to the same sort of TV schedule, but I don't know, that seems like maybe one of the workarounds for that, because a few people said the same thing, like, I just didn't know where the fuck I was even at.
Yeah, no, I think that'd be a great idea. And then, you know, you have the two shorter races would be back to back, so yeah. You'd have, you know, that sprint pace and then have to recover and then go again and then actually be able to go back to the pits and, you know, if something's wrong on your bike, actually address it. Where,
yeah.
Like right now, if, you know, if you fall over and you bend your clutch lever or, you know, if your bars are twisted or, you know, whatever the case, it's like, do I pull in and fix this and just scratch this moto or do I just try to ride with my bike bent the whole time?
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you had that, you know, 20-minute break between the second and the third, let everybody catch up to what's going on, let the riders catch a break, and then have that final, like, you know, 12-lapper or whatever it is, you know, that's, you know, half again as long. I think that'd be good.
Yeah, because I think that was probably like just like one thing for me watching it is kind of it feels like it's over before it starts, but then like you said with the lights class, I think that's. It did what it is designed to do. Like, it's supposed to be, like, super unpredictable, like, multiple gate drops. You've got to be super consistent, and it's going to give a lot more people a chance to, like, be in the mix. Like you said, McElrath won without, you know, winning a moto. Oldenburg, I think, did he even end up getting on the podium in the end?
Yeah, he got third, I think.
But he, like, won the first, you know.
1:19.1. He got in a big first turn pileup in the second one.
Well, and that's cool that you can still get in a first turn pileup and still get on the box.
Well, I think that was kind of an anomaly, that race. Like, yeah. I mean, it was just so spread out. I don't know what. I think Blows had one good moto, right? Like a second, and then the other ones were kind of a little bit off, and he ended up second, like almost won.
Yeah.
So it's. I mean, I think it'll be probably not as jumbled up this weekend. But again, that class has a lot of really good guys in it that, like, there's probably five or six guys that can win, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, that makes it. That Dude, makes
maybe
it cool.
more. Like, I mean, you got Bogle is in there. You got Sealy that's in there. Yeah, I feel like.
Moss.
Yeah, Mossy's in there. I feel like Aaron Tanney didn't get to show.
Yeah.
Like, he's good, you know, and I don't think he got to show that.
Chisholm was in second in the first round. Chisholm. And got a flat tire and went down hard. So, like, he was he was looking really good, and then his race kind of got screwed too. So, yeah, I mean, probably seven or eight guys that realistically could win.
Yeah.
You know, Oldenburg looked like the man.
Yeah.
But then, you know, Anstey kind of looked like the man at times too.
Oh, yeah, we haven't even said Anstey.
Yeah, so, I don't know. It's definitely interesting. Like, I don't know, you know, in the 450 class, you know, you've got Ken, and we had Eli and Brayton and Freese, but, you know, the depth of the 250 class is, like, it's... I mean, the depth of both is big, but the 250 class, there's a lot of guys with similar speed.
Yeah, and I think it's like such a weird feeling in this year because it's like a pilot series. Indo, I'm pretty sure Indo was scheduled, like they were going to try and do a race in Jakarta. But then I'm pretty sure Bailey went there and the stadium just like kind of wasn't up to scratch yet, like from what I understand. And they didn't want to risk like the product not being as good. So I think that for fans at home, like if we kind of saw these guys like week in and week out, like we did an 8-round series, like I think what you're saying about like that lights class, it'd be this like wide open championship that you'd really want to watch to see how it went down. And I think that two motos, it's almost like two races, it's like almost a bit of a tease. And then I think that in the States, you've kind of got Supercross that rolls into motocross, which rolls into Supercross, which rolls. So I think that the storylines just like always kind of keep going. Whereas this, it's just like day one. There's not really the storylines aren't set, but I really think they're there, eh?
Yeah, and then the way they're doing the points, which I didn't even. I guess I'm an idiot for not reading the rule book on the team app that we got, but I didn't realize that every moto, like every. You know, race of the Triple Crown is a points paying moto towards the actual championship. Yeah. I was thinking, okay, I got fifth. Like, I probably got 18 points or whatever. And then I looked, I'm like, no, I got like 46 points or whatever it was, which it makes the gaps, you know, it made my gap bigger from, like, you know, my placing to being in the championship. But if you look at the 250 class, it's like anybody that was in the top six has a chance at winning this championship still.
Yeah, right.
It's like only like 7 points or 8 points from like first to sixth, the way it all worked out. So, I mean, it just adds more parity to the whole championship. And then if you start adding like 8 or 9 rounds into it, you know, somebody that
should be just wide open.
Somebody that's just real consistent and stays in the mix could be a guy that, you know, that could still win the championship versus somebody that, you know, has a couple real good races and tosses it away. Because even if on paper you get fifth or sixth at the race, if you throw away a moto, you're losing a lot of points.
Yeah, so yeah, yeah.
It's kind of cool.
Yeah, yeah. Well, so I guess like going then from this season into like the years to come, like how do you see this playing out? Like I see you being here and I see you doing this series for a bit. But who do you see becoming like kind of staples in this championship? And like, I don't know, are there any guys that you can kind of see coming across? Because I think that's probably like the biggest question mark that people have at the moment. And I think it's like, it's just like internet drama, I guess, that we've all been indulging in because we've kind of got something to talk about. But I think that's been like the big question. And even when I talk to guys like Townley and like people that are all for this series and like want this to be as good as it can be, even they've still got like kind of question marks over like, okay, so who's actually going to be like long-term players in it? Like, have you thought about that and like some ways guys are going to get into this or like, I don't know.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just whoever doesn't want to do outdoors, really. You know, I think it's cool, like what they're doing in the States with the SMX and those two championships getting together. I know that's something that, like, you know, the guys at Monster, you know, they're stoked to see. They've wanted to have happen for a long time.
Yeah, okay.
You know, and now it's coming, and you know, just the timing of it is, I feel like it's a little bit crazy, and
suspicious.
Definitely, you know, there's but it's something that's been in the, I feel like it's been in the works, you know, but now it's. You know, the timing of it's great because now there's competition between the series.
Yeah,
you know, now you have two promoters that are trying to push the sport. And, you know, the winners are going to be the fans and the riders.
100%.
Because now we have more opportunities. So, I don't know. It's just going to be who doesn't want to do outdoors or who is kind of – maybe somebody falls into something where they don't land where they want to land in the U.S.
Yeah.
And they can land something good here.
Yeah.
And then opens up their eyes to how, you know – how cool it is to travel the world racing supercross, or just people that want to change the scenery.
Yeah.
You know, like if you when you race supercross in the States, let's say you're going to Indy and you got to fly from California to Indy, which isn't that bad of a flight, but you know, it's a 6-hour flight. You land there and you want to be in that town as, you know, maybe
little as possible,
as little, you know, so that you can get back to the track and you can train, you can do your
recovery
thing,
because
you have Saturday only, you know, where this, you know, I kind of, we caught some rain back home in North Carolina like the week leading up to this, so I didn't get to practice as much as I wanted to this last week. But we get, you know, a good amount of practice on Friday to shake everything down, and then we race. So, you know, I feel like the travel schedule kind of leans towards actually taking in the environment being around the people and kind of getting more involved in the, you know, what's happening, and less just like, okay, I have to pin it straight back to the test track to get ready for, you know, to get 3 days in to pin it back.
And I guess like everyone's kind of in the same boat, right? Because like if you look back to, let's say, like the James, Chad, Ricky era, where it was like they were looking for every single like millimeter of advantage that they could. So then they started getting private jets. They started building compounds. They, like everything just like level. And because you could, because like you could get in Saturday and then you could get out Saturday night and then you could be back riding Monday. Whereas, and it's like, maybe there's an argument for that, like not being the best thing for like the athletes themselves, or maybe that's like not the best thing for like longevity and careers maybe. Whereas you look at like this side, you're all in the same boat. Like you all have to get here, you all have to do the travel. There's not really going to be a bunch of tracks, and then it's like everything comes down to, like you said, that good amount of time that you get on Friday. So it's not like anyone's getting any crazy advantage over anyone else. It's sort of, maybe it does kind of like roll back a bit of that kind of like pressure.
Yeah, I mean, and like the series is doing a really good job of like they're setting up all these promotions. So it's like when you look at it on paper, you're like, man, I got to leave on Monday, so I'm there on Wednesday to do these promotions that they have set up. But then they make them so fun and you know, and treat us so well when we come in and do stuff. So it makes it, it just makes it more relaxing and more enjoyable. You get to take everything in. And then you have, you know, the Friday practice, we get almost an hour of practice, it seemed like. And I think that, me personally, like I get the track dialed in like two laps, and I don't get much faster like as the night goes on. But I seen that, you know, guys that didn't look good on Friday, you know, they had all day Saturday to figure it out again. And I think that's what made the racing so much kind of closer.
Yeah.
Is, and everybody's like, oh, the track's easy. No, the track wasn't easy. The track, we just had a lot of more, we had more time than we normally do to dial in all these sections and make everything, everybody looked better.
Yeah,
like the track,
yeah.
Nobody looked good first couple practices on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, a few people did, but it wasn't like everybody was just on fire. And then by Saturday, like everybody kind of had the lines dialed. Everybody was doing similar things. Everybody kind of figured out what worked. And I think that made the racing tighter than, you know, there was like nine of us within a second or something like that at Tomac.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't
Which
think
that doesn't
it was,
happen that much in the States.
No, it does. But, you know, there's the you know, the talent pool in the States. There's a pretty, you know, there's those guys are on fire, you know, like they're all firing on all cylinders. And for a pre-race event like this and for all of us to be that close in times was it was good. And in the track, it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, and I think you made a good point before. Like, I think maybe, I don't know, like, maybe it's just the internet and how the internet works, but it seems like everyone just got, like, super into the whole, like, Feld versus WSX. And, like, but what you're saying is right. Like, whether it was a straight reaction to this series that, like, brought Feld and MX Sports together, or whether it was just like purely coincidence, it sort of like doesn't matter in the end, right? Like what matters is that there's way more seats now. There's way more teams that like need to fill. Like a great example is like MDK. So Chad's out this weekend, and then is Grant here?
Not, I think Grant got. I think Grant's out too.
Yeah. So then there's two spots that have like legit have to get filled. Yeah. Otherwise, they don't get the money that the start money that the team. Gets
they,
right.
I think they get fined.
Yeah. So it's like, that's great because, you know, you go in other series where it's like, we'll just put all our effort into this one guy now.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's cool. But now we're in a position where, you know, you like have to find some talent. Guess who gets a shot in the big show on Saturday night? Jackson Richardson.
Yeah.
One of them, like, the crowd here will lose their shit for him. Like, he's one of Australia's, like, most favorite riders. So it's like, that's a great deal. Like, MDK, you know, let's say it's in the AMA where like a team ain't gonna get fined for not having a guy, like that bike will sit under the truck and they'll put their energy, so like that's a really good thing. So I think that, yeah, you know, kind of through all the noise, which has been admittedly pretty fun to like deal with, and, like the riders win and the fans win out of this no matter what.
Yeah, and I mean, there's just more money being circulated in the sport. You know,
we've
like the Supercross in the States, they found like what $6 million more dollars. This series is putting like another, you know, that again at least, you know,
yeah.
for money, you know, for guys to come in the next couple of years. Like, that's what, like $12 million
yeah.
dollars that just grew
the pie gets
for,
bigger.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, so and I think, yeah, it's. it's been fun to deal with like all that, but I think that like the dust is slowly going to settle on it all, and then we're just going to see that like this is really good for everyone. Like this is just like net positive, you know. And I think about, you know, like your brother, he's a guy that should, he didn't get to that. You good? You
want yeah,
to
I'm good.
Is there a water bottle up there? Get the man some water. Let's go.
Ah, sorry.
Yeah, like, you know, your brother's a guy that, like, we didn't get to see him a lot in, you know, Supercross last year. Like, and I think when you really do think about it, there is kind of a bunch of guys that, you know, whether it's, like, they just don't land in the right spot or, you know, like, circumstance kind of keeps them from, you know, like, really being able to do that thing.
Well, I mean, too, in the States, like, there's just a level of bikes that if you're not on those bikes, it's not, you know.
Mm.
But, you know, here you've got teams that they're locked in, they have to have two 450s. So if somebody gets hurt, there's still good bikes available on the market, and there's 20 or, you know, 42 more bikes that need riders for the sport. So however you look at it, you know, whichever, you know, you can have your series and go with it. And, you know, if you're over here, you're probably excited about WSX. If you're in the States, you're like, oh, you know, we already got Supercross, like,
yeah.
What are they doing?
Yeah.
And great, you know, like, have that opinion, that's up to you, but for just the sport in general, competition's always good, in my opinion. And, you know, I think for what's going on with the SMX and all that stuff in the States, I think it's great for the States, you know. It's good. And, you know, I think they're trying to make it like a playoff series, right? You know, you do all these races and then they put all this emphasis on these three races because people have a short attention span, right?
Yeah.
So the SMX Cup is going to be, it's going to be great for that. But if you're not one of the top three guys in, you know, if you're not the, you know, top three guy in 250 and 450, I don't know if it's as beneficial for you. You know, yeah, it's going to be greatly beneficial for those guys.
Yeah.
But if you're just a, you know, 15th through, you know, whatever place guy, you know, it's probably not going to have that life-changing effect for you, right?
Yeah.
And then, you know, in this series, you have guys, you know, have half the top 10 is, you know, in the States is in this series. So it's just, it broadens it out for everybody and kind of spreads it around. So I think it's, I'm stoked. I think this group of guys knows how to put on an event as good as anybody in the world.
Yeah.
So if you're, you know, if it's coming to your city and you get a chance to be there, you're going to be stoked. It's going to be great. You know, they put on arguably for the crowd live as good or better of a race as anywhere. So that's, you know, I think everybody's winning.
Yeah. And I think that over time,
oh, thanks, bud.
Yeah. I just think over time that's like going to come out too. And it's like, it's just, it is different, you know, like I never really want to see, like the AMA stuff change. Like Supercross in America is dope as fuck. Like we don't really need that to change. But I also ain't mad at a completely different show and like DJs and like freestyle in the middle of it, and, you know, like all of, I guess, just like the different way that they kind of go about making an event.
For sure. I mean, I think any time that there's something that's fresh and like you get a new eyes and like, hey, let's see if this works, or hey, we don't really like this, let's change that up. It's always good, you know, and keeps everybody on their toes. And the way you train for this is a little bit different.
What are we up to here?
Is this Sarah McLachlan?
This is a weird track.
Is this one of those like send money for pets?
Josh, I love you. And I've been waiting for a long time. We've done like 4 podcasts together. Yeah.
What are these days? I got to actually come to the Gold Coast and hang out.
Yeah, what's the plan? Have you got any for that?
I was going to come, and flights were so expensive that I found like a crazy cheap flight in and out of Hawaii.
Oh,
so
sick.
I was like, Molly, you want to just do a little honeymoon in Hawaii instead? And like, it just worked out. I mean, it was going to save me like so much money. So he's
how that. Dude, the flights while there's like this going on, we can just talk about some random shit. The flights right now inside of Australia are so ridiculously expensive. I don't understand what's going on.
It only cost me, it was $500 to go from Charlotte to Honolulu, and then another $500 to go from Honolulu to here. And it was like gonna be $5,000 round trip if I went a different way, the way it worked out. So yeah, I was like, you know, Hawaii is a great place, I got some friends there, I'm like, we'll just go relax there for a
couple
days.
What island are you gonna go to?
I think we're gonna bounce around a little bit. Like we're just, Honolulu is like the big airport, so we'll go into Oahu, and then I got some friends there that have a track there, so I might ride one day.
Oh,
and
sick.
Yeah, he's got so, and then I got another buddy. He's like my old roommate. Just one day, like up and moved to Hawaii. I gotta actually find his number. I'm just gonna show up at his doorstep. He just ghosted everybody, and he's just Hawaiian now. I don't know, but I'm gonna find him.
That's epic. Yeah. Kauai's pretty dope.
That's what I heard. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I've always wanted to go there. Yeah. But
that's where we did that Dream Ride 2 shoot.
Oh, really? That's right. That was sick.
Yeah, yeah. That,
is like, that still there?
Dude, that track's probably still there. That'd be a good vlog.
It's probably a jungle now.
Well, so we built it, and then part of the deal of like building that track, because it was like a local, it was literally, they just like mowed some shit in the grass there, yeah, and then they built some singles with like no landings. You know the kind of like singles you build as a kid where you just like dig it out and then you pop into the dirt on the top? So yeah, that's all it was. So we built like that legit track, and then we just smoothed everything out to make it so that the locals like had a track after. Yeah. So like it probably is still there.
I remember that video was sick. Wasn't it Keisha?
Anytime you have Keisha and Malcolm in a video.
Yeah, Keisha and Malcolm. And just the jumps were good. Those guys were tossing sick whips. It was just a badass.
Billy Swap built that track. Do you remember Billy Swap? Yeah. That's the dude that built all
the tracks back in the day.
So he literally moved to Kauai after that shoot. So he did that. I got him to come over, build that track. And then he fucking never left. He had a kid there and everything. Like, he's still living over there.
That's wild.
Random as hell.
Is this like the Grammys? Is this our wrap it up music?
Yeah. Yeah. What time are you? Oh, you still got a little bit.
Ah, okay, we're good.
So what are you looking forward to for next year? There's some crazy shit going on.
Well, I'm to be honest, like, what I'm most looking forward to, like, really doesn't even involve me. I'm just pumped that Justin's back, my little brother.
Dude,
like,
I agree completely.
He's so sick at riding. He's got a good opportunity. He's going to be on the Team Tedder deal. I'm pretty, like, it's looking like I'm going to be with him and, like, probably do, like, select rounds, like, 10 rounds or something.
Yeah, okay.
So, you know, I'll get to go out.
Dude, do all 50.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm doing good, I'll stick around. But I want to leave some room in there to do, you know, free ride projects and videos stuff. You know, every once in a while, you know, maybe there's a couple of rounds that I don't need to go to so I can focus on some other things. And, you know, I mean, we'll just see. I mean, if I'm knocking on the door at top 10 every weekend, then maybe I won't, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe I'll just go to all of them. But either way, I'm stoked to be able to – I've never been a teammate with my brother. I've never even got to train with him. Like, since we've been pro, we've never been, like, in the same – you know, never been able to ride the same tracks. Like, I'd be on RCH and he'd be on PC or he'd be on KTM and I'd be somewhere – you know, we're separated.
Yeah.
So now we're – that's going to change, and I think he's fired up, and I swear that if he wants it, you know, his racing career is, his best days are still in front of him.
Yeah.
He seems fired up, and that makes me happy.
Straight Rhythm was a really good indication of just how talented that little motherfucker is.
He's good.
Like, he's a G, bro.
Dude, he's funny. Like, all summer, I was up doing the Big Hill Jam event, and I'm out there building jumps and building stuff, and like, I'm always going out and wanting to ride. Like, I'm in Oregon, and I only have a couple of buddies that really ride, and, you know, and even less that are like on the level of wanting to just to get gnarly and do stuff. So I'm begging Justin to ride, and he's like, oh no, maybe tomorrow. Doesn't ride, and then the event comes around, and I'm like, I order him gear. I lay it out for him. I have somebody come and like fix his bike up and prep it and make sure it's got the right, you know, everything on it. And he's like, yeah, I don't know if I'm gonna ride. I'm like, dude, you have to ride. Put gear up. Let's go. Everything's there for you. And he puts on. He had like Fox gear. He's like, oh, I kind of like this stuff. This is sick. All right. And he just goes out and smashes everybody. Smokes me on his just a stock Honda, like with, you know, some suspension. And he's so talented. It's stupid. He's. It's like effortless to him. So, you know, I'm stoked to have him back. You know, he quit. He worked at a tire shop. He, like, if you just pulled in,
really?
And he needed new tires for, yeah, like, because he had downtime in between him becoming a cop and his, you know, his racing
thing. So he was trying to be a cop.
Well, he was a cop.
What?
Yeah, he was a sheriff's deputy in Oregon for a little bit. And, but yeah, so he did, he went from.
He'd actually be a pretty good cop.
I mean, I think he would have. I just don't know if becoming a cop in Oregon at this time is like the the most respected spot, and just, you know, there's just a lot of
Oregon's got some weird stuff going on.
Laws and some weird turmoil there, I guess, and I don't know. He just I don't know if he tried it for a little while and just decided that he didn't think that was going to make him, you know, feel fulfilled and be as happy as he thought it would be in the beginning. So he stopped that, and then he just bought like 300 acres in Wyoming, and I think he thought he was going to, like, he watched like Yellowstone or something, and he's going to be a rancher or something. So he still got that, and it's sick. It's like backed up to like all this like sick free ride lane, like thousands and thousands of miles of free riding. So hopefully we'll get to utilize that one of these days, but yeah, I don't know. Now he's back, he's racing, and he's as good as ever. So if he's has a good off season, stays healthy, because, you know, last year he was gonna race.
Yeah.
And he had a countershaft sprocket blow up on a triple onto a tabletop and a triple off.
Yeah.
And it just exploded on the step off part, and he packed himself in, and he got it like a grade 5 separation. And, you know, if you listen to some of the media out there, like, oh, he took all this money and he didn't ride and he wasn't hurt, and no, that's not the case. A, he didn't get paid past his crash at all, and B, he had a grade 5 separation of his shoulder that he couldn't even move it for like 3-4 months.
But yeah,
he's made a full recovery and he's fired up, and I'm like, I'm his biggest cheerleader, and I know he could go out and, I mean, top 5s I think are real realistic for him, and podiums is what, if I was him, would be my goal.
Well, we talked about it, like his, I can't remember when we talked about it. Maybe we were in Barcelona, but dude, his debut on that 450, it was a Tampa. Florida round, right? Yeah, it was Tampa. Dude, I was like, he was on for the win that night, and there was one turn, I'm pretty sure it was like a left, 90 left after the finish line. And it was, dude, like, just no one was even close to him in, like, that turn. And just to have something so basic, like landing ramp, left-hand 90-degree turn, to be, like, a second faster than everybody else in that is just talent.
And he was doing that quad that nobody else was doing. Baggett, I think, did it, but then Baggett clipped it and went into the net.
Yep.
And then Justin was the only one doing it, and he was, like, doing it in traffic, like, making passes. Like, he's just, he's insanely talented, and he's just always been that kid that, you know, he's so good at riding. And when I was young, it was, like, all the attention from my family and sponsors, everything was, like, on me as a kid.
Yeah.
But then Justin would just, like, if he felt like it, he'd just show up and go unbeat at, like, at Loretta, or not Loretta's, at like World Minis, and, you know, all this kind of, like, dude, he would just go out and win every single moto, and then, you know, then maybe the next year he'd be like, miss his moto because he was off making a little dirt bike track or riding a bicycle. Like, he just wouldn't, you know, be, it's like when he was focused on it and wanted it, he could literally just go out and destroy everybody. And then, you know, but I think as you get older, you know, he's realizing that, you know, what a great opportunity he has and what a great talent he has. And, you know, taking a couple of years off and, you know, changing tires for a living and becoming a cop and, you know, doing some real life, real world stuff, you know, it gives you a different perspective. I mean, I thought I was done riding dirt bikes at 25, and I took a job at Monster Energy and was, you know, like in the office and doing all that kind of stuff, writing contracts. And I loved it. I mean, that was the greatest. I had the greatest bosses. It was the coolest company.
But you could do that when the talent for riding a dirt bike is no longer relevant.
I just, you know, you kind of miss that, you know, pushing yourself, having a goal. You know, I was going out and I was celebrating somebody doing something great all the time, but I was never, you know, it was never, nothing feels as good as when you accomplish something for yourself. And when you have that, you know, that unique ability to do it like he does, you know, I think this time around when he starts to have some success again, I think it's gonna feel so much sweeter, and then he probably won't want to let go of that,
man. And you know, like, for me sitting here as a person that just does not have that, like, that's never gonna be on my cards. And it's like, that's, I think, from a fan's perspective, like, I mean, I can do other things in my own way, but, like, to have that level of talent to ride a bike and to know you could go out there, like, Justin Hill could 100% podium a 450 main event next year, and to, like, have that level of ability and not use it, I mean, I look at that, I'm like, that seems crazy to me, you know?
Yeah. You're selling yourself short. You got a great thing going. You got a lot of things to be proud of and a lot of accomplishments over the years, you know? What you got built is awesome. I remember when you first started up, and to see how big it's become, and the names you're getting on here, it's like, you got some You got some attaboys in there.
Oh, I appreciate that. But I mean, from a, like a writing perspective, yeah, I mean, you know, like it's
straight
just
physical, you know,
yeah. Like for
contest,
just,
but
yeah. Yeah, but like for just to, I guess it, what I'm trying to say, just like makes me happy that there's someone out there that can do something that like 99% of the world can't do. And then they're going to go and do that thing. Yeah. It's like, it feels like he should be kind of doing that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pumped. And then he seems like, you know, the crew chief on the Team Tedder, it's Sean Bell, who was his mechanic when he won his championship. He was my mechanic when, you know, I was at RCH, and just like an awesome guy. And then, you know, the Tedder team, it's, you know, it's a family organization.
Yeah.
It's the family runs it. They're passionate about motorcycles. And luckily, you know, the company that they've built, want, you know, they want to advertise in racing, and they want to have you know,
do the corporate
deal. It's their thing,
yeah,
you know,
yeah,
like
yeah.
That's what they grew up doing. It's their roots, and they're in a position to continue it and give a couple of bikes for guys to try to go out there and succeed. So it's all
dude,
around
they're,
a cool
they're
thing.
Honestly an underrated family in motorsports. I think like they've probably always flown a little bit under the radar, but in terms of like the opportunities that they've given to people within the industry, like the money that they've spent, the people that they've helped, like, you know, the relationships that they've kept going, like, I actually think they're pretty underrated. I think especially for what they did for you this year as well, like to pretty much just let you run your own program, you can still go and ride a Stark, you can like, you can be like the asset to the moto community that I guess like you can be or like use your full potential, to just like have them support that, and then now to have you guys under the same tent, like that's pretty dope.
Yeah, and I mean the family, the Tedders, like I grew up at the, you know, like the same age as Dakota or close to, and all the kids, like I think at one point I think all five brothers were racing, and then
yeah.
You know, the dad raced and he would go win the vet stuff. So I mean, they've been around for years, and it's just cool that they're going to continue it past, you know, all the Tedder boys wanting to pursue their racing careers. You know, now Dakota's overseeing the team.
Yeah, I was going to ask. So, does Dakota run the team?
Yeah, he's essentially like he runs it. You know, his dad is all really really involved. But then on like the technical side, like Sean Bell is going to be running, you know, the technical side, the building the bikes, you know, what parts and all that we're going to run. So you know, it's not a factory effort, but you know, the equipment, they don't cut corners, you know,
yeah,
because somebody
yeah.
you know, somebody will give them, you know, give them something or pay them to run some part that doesn't work.
Yeah,
you know, that's the thing, like, you know, some of these teams, you don't realize it until you go through it, but sometimes the parts that go on your bike you wouldn't put on your bike yourself.
Yeah.
But there's a contractual reason
yeah.
that it's on there, and you can with these guys, you don't have to worry about that. You know, these things are, it's not factory, but it's solid.
Well, so that's actually like a, I guess a little bit of a question. I'll let you get out of here after this.
Yeah, no,
so that was like a little bit of a question with this series, especially with like Kenny's deal, like the way that went down, like, so no more HRC. But I mean, I've been saying it for a few podcasts, like, we're just racing fucking dirt bikes. Like, we ain't racing Formula One. Like, you don't need to have that crazy level. Like, you don't need a factory bike. But am I, like, wrong in saying that? Like, let's say you've got, like, $100,000 to spend on a 450 Supercross race bike. Like, do you need factory parts if you're Ken Roczen? Like, can he build his own bike next year and be competitive? Or is he now fucked without a factory Honda?
No, not at all. With where he's at, where Ken is at, I feel like if Ken just, you know, he's got, you know, like if it's Mitch Payton or whoever he goes with,
yeah.
whoever, like, people are going to want to see him succeed and be involved with him, and he's going to
yeah.
get good equipment, and he's going to get comparable equipment. Maybe it's not, you know, maybe there's something somebody has that's, you know, just a little bit, you know, once that gives them some sort of mental,
yeah.
you know, gain, or, you know, there's something that they like, and, you know, maybe he'll run into a snag where he can't get a part he likes. And is that going to make or break him? Probably not. If he's happy and he's excited about what he's doing and he's passionate and he's doing it for himself, then he's probably not going to sit there and dwell on, oh, I can't change that one part. Where
yeah.
if you got somebody that's controlling you and you're racing for somebody else, and, you know, you think you, there's something you want to do and you don't know why, but they won't do it.
Yeah.
Sometimes that'll eat at you worse than being in the situation where, oh, I can't get this. This is why I can't get this. Put it out of my brain, build my bike, go race and go try to win, and then show everybody, you know, I can win without that. You know, that it's just two different mindsets when you're doing something for yourself or if you're doing it for somebody else. I think if it's all, you know, if Ken finds that that want to do it, and he finds that just burning desire to be a champ, he could do it on anything.
Well, so I'm pretty sure in 16 when he won his outdoor championship, like, he kind of went away from, like, factory suspension and, like, did his own thing for a little bit. Like, he's kind of always been that guy in a sense too, right?
I don't really know. I haven't, to be honest, been around him, you know, in his testing or any of that stuff. Like, he went to RCH the year after I left RCH, so I don't know what that process was like. But I mean, just based off a sheer talent level,
yeah,
and what kind of equipment you can get if you're just buying equipment,
yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the 250 class it's much harder to be
competitive. Yeah, I would agree with that.
But in the 450 class, I think if you have, you know, $100,000 to put it building your motorcycle, you're gonna be within, you know, the only thing you might, you know, might struggle to get is if you want to change your transmission or if you want to just do like some out there things that might cost a lot of money. But even then, if he wants it bad enough and he's got some sponsor and support, there's people that make parts, you know, you can get it done. It's just going to take you maybe a little bit longer than if you're factory team and you can just walk into the back end of the CNC and go get it made, you know.
Yeah.
That's really the only difference. But having that freedom to do what you want and doing it for yourself
could be worth
I don't
more.
Think is ever yeah. a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know?
All right, we're done. You're the man. I miss you, bro. And I'm stoked that you're here. And we'll hang out for the rest of the weekend.
We'll be around.
Good luck. Hey, get that chip, bro.
I just need to start.
Get that chip.
I just need to start. Thanks, man.
Thanks, bro.
What time is it?
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. Like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.